Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. We are having guests that have differing spiritual belief systems, and some have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, my guest today is Reverend Harriet Walden, who is not yet in the studio. As an author of The Pledge of Excellence, A Parenting Guide, and having spent a lifetime raising boys, Reverend Walden is an expert guiding parents to raise boys to become strong men that make stronger leaders. She is the founder and director of Family Empowerment Institute and the Greater Good Foundation based in Seattle, Washington. She has been a student of metaphysics for over 30 years. She is currently a master facilitator for the Virtues Project. She has presented Virtues Training, The Language of Love That Will Heal the World. Reverend Harriet is the author of Repetitious Journaling, a transformational tool for creating a new groove in your subconscious mind. She actively studied with the International Biogenic Society and is a certified teacher of biogenic living. She has developed an experimental program called Year for Children. Participants from every walk of life wrote prayers for children. This project was endorsed by the church. Now, just to let you know, tomorrow my special guest is going to be Tina, who is an adult child of an alcoholic, and she is also a bipolar disorder survivor, and she has a lesbian child. And that will be tomorrow night at 7:30. And Reverend Walden is now in the studio. We had a little trouble with the transmission, but I do have her on the line. So let me welcome her. Reverend Harriet, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful today, and thank you so much for the opportunity to be on your show.
Well,
I appreciate that.
Oh, I'm so grateful to have you. Thank you for agreeing to be on the show, and I've been looking forward to it. So, let's see here. I'd like to start off by asking you to tell me a little bit about your family of origin.
Oh, well, my family of origin, my ancestors came by way of the slave ship. We are the stolen ones. That was brought to America, and of course we've been here since the 1830s, and I grew up in Florida, raised by my grandparents. My father's side of the family, my mother died when I was 2 years old. I was raised in the bowels of segregation, and so I went to all Negro schools and was educated by wonderful master teachers that was taught by the late Mary McLeod Mathune, who was a friend of Eleanor Roosevelt. She started a black school there, and Ms. Mathune did to teach teachers in there. So I was taught by all master teachers when I was growing up, and moved away from Florida many, many years ago. And I've been on the West Coast most of my adult life, though.
I see. Well, can you tell me a little bit about the religious and spiritual traditions that were part of your growing up years?
Well, yeah, I grew up AME Methodist, and Richard Allen was the Methodist, the AME Methodist Church is the oldest black church denomination in America. It sprung from the white Methodist church, and Richard Allen got tired of being discriminated and sitting in the back and way up. It was like in the late 1700s, and so Richard Allen started the African American Episcopal Church. And it was all about liberation and freedom. They were the people who started Watch Night, which was going to be on New Year's Eve night. The first Watch Night was January. It was December 31st, 1862, and that's when people gathered to watch and pray because Lincoln signed the Emancipation of a Proclamation on January 1st, 1863. And I grew up in that tradition, and all of my life I was a Sunday school teacher even at an early age, and grew up at Allen Chapel AME Church in Sanford, Florida.
I see. Well, can you tell me what your early concept of God was?
Well, my early concept of God is that I always thought it was something missing. I always thought it was more to life than what I was ever told.
Yes.
And of course, I grew up in the times when they had white people on fans, and everywhere you look, you didn't see any icons that looked like you. So I always knew that there was something wrong with that. And so all my life, I was always trying to find another part of the truth that wasn't available. A religion keeps people within the in certain boundaries, and sometimes you don't always get the truth. You have to be a seeker to go outside those boundaries sometime to find out other truths that's available. But just don't get them that easy. Sometimes you have to demonstrate that you're really interested, and sometimes it takes a long, long time to run into something that you can know in your spirit that is the truth.
Right. Did you think of that God was a judgmental God or a loving God?
Well, I grew up with the judgment God. I mean, it was only after I got involved with Unity back in 1970. So I started reading more things, and I read, Think and Grow Rich, The Magic of Thinking Big, and Og Mandino's The Greatest Salesman. Then I wound up at the Unity Church in Seattle. That was way back, over 30 years ago. And got introduced to an expanded God. Because the God I knew was always in that little box and was always judgmental, and you could never actually do enough to be right. You just have to continue to try to do every day. Always falling short. So I did not know a loving God. And then for us as African Americans coming from via the slave trade. Even when we became Christian, our life didn't get any better. So it wasn't even then when you took the faith, you didn't get not one more more food or nothing. It was always religion that taught you that our freedom would come in death and not being liberated on the planet. So
yeah.
So I was glad to intersect something else.
Well, I can certainly imagine that. You know, it's interesting. Every single person, including myself, that I've talked to outside of Unity, their early perception of God was that he was judgmental, that he was a separate entity. There was no talk of him being a loving God in spite of the teachings of Jesus, which I think is interesting. But I fell into that trap, too. And I felt like I was a sinner, that I was being judged for being gay, that I was going to go to hell. And it was a difficult path to walk, and I felt a lot of shame and guilt about my sexuality. So I came to Unity. Well, I rejected that God years ago, especially when I joined Alcoholics Anonymous, when they said, if the God you have isn't working for you, invent a new one. And so I did invent a loving God. But Unity certainly embraces the concept that God is all about love. God is within us, through us, and present in everyone, everywhere, omnipotent, omnipresent. And so I just love the teachings of Unity. They really jive with the belief systems that I've developed over the years. So how has your concept of God changed from early on through the years up until you came to Unity and after Unity?
Well, it's changed dramatically. One of the things that you really learn early on when you you open yourself up to another way of thinking is that you can never be where God is not. I mean,
right.
That's wherever you are, God is. And that principle in itself changed my life. And one of those, you know, the prayer protection, you know, my kids and I would we would get in the car, and we wouldn't ever leave anywhere without saying the prayer protection. You know, light of God surrounds us, you know, that prayer.
Yeah.
And just that prayer alone helps you, or helped me, to get into a frame of worship and knowing that wherever I am, wherever I find myself, God is.
Right.
So that, for me, was transformative. And
yes.
when you understand that piece, and then further on down the road, you learn that the kingdom of God is always where it's always been, in the midst of us, within us. And then you understand that wherever you are, you can't help but be where God is, because that's where the kingdom is.
That's right.
And wherever we are, we're on holy ground.
That's,
you know,
right.
So that's how my life changed.
Yes, yes. Well, the other thing that was a new concept for me, and I haven't heard Unity directly speak of this, but it's my belief that heaven is here and now if we choose
Oh, yes.
To go there, if we stay in a place of love and joy. I mean, we can choose heaven or hell, and why would anybody choose hell? If we get out of our egos and go to that place of love, which is our spirits, we're always in heaven, and now is all that we have. It's all that's happening. Everything's happening at the same time, and we're already in heaven.
Well, I believe that, too. But, you know, the greatest secret of the ages is that that so much information has been hidden from people. I mean,
yes.
That is really it. And
it's about
control. And in the 4th century, I mean, when Constantine brought all the people together, that's when the church and religion made an alliance. And the church keeps one part of you under control, and the law keeps the other part of you controlled. And so the whole lifetime is how to find freedom. And the freedom...
Right.
The freedom, it comes from within when you understand that none of this stuff is true the way it's been presented. We've never fallen out of favor with God. How can God fall out of favor with itself? Joel Goldsmith says, I believe it was Gold, or one of those great mystics, says that God was so in love with itself through it created itself as itself and all living things.
So it
can never be. So everywhere we look, the presence is. That presence is everywhere present. And because of the control mechanism, and so the soul has to want to be free long enough or hard enough, or knowing that that it was born to be free, to break free. It's a hard job to break free, because everybody else, people want to be in bondage. I mean, bondage to the old way, or some of the old thoughts and things that we have been taught. But when you understand that you are a divine being having a human experience, and that we can never be left alone, because how can God leave itself alone? Then it changes your life. You know,
yes.
It gives you strength to make it. It gives you strength to do a lot of social justice work, sacred activism work, in the trenches out there, you know, where I'm the founder of Mothers for Police Accountability. We've been holding the police accountable out here for 24 years, and now I've got a new show called Mother's Justice Show, reaching out to other communities. So that's the strength that you get to do the sacred activism, to do other kind of
right.
sacred service, when you know that wherever you are, and people want that message. You know, people want to know that what they're seeing doesn't have to stay that way. I mean, whatever level they are, people want to know that things can be different for them. And that's I think that's what New Thought does. And New Thought is old ancient wisdom that came out of Egypt many, many centuries ago. I mean, nothing really new about it. It's just that it's been released to the planet. You know, it's been re-released to the planet. It's like some of these healing modalities that people are doing, Reiki and all of that. It's not new. It has just been re-released to the planet, and that's really what's happening now. Lots of good stuff is happening on the planet. And we have to keep our eyes focused because, you know, we can get carried away about the other stuff that's happening, but there's a lot of good stuff happening on the planet right now.
Oh, yes, there is. I think consciousness is being raised. Now, you talked about...
It is.
Yes. Now, you talked about souls longing for God or something to that effect. And I think it's so sad that so many people are not in touch with their souls, even people that practice religions, because they're not in touch with the concept of love. They're still fixed in a place of judgment. I'm wondering what you would say to somebody that is struggling with judgment and, you know, without disagreeing with them, how you could help enlighten somebody like that without proselytizing.
Well, you know, a lot of times when people are really stuck in being harsh around judgment is because they have never known discretion themselves. They've never known unconditional love themselves. I mean, you can only give what you have. You can only give from your own experience. And some groups of people have never had discretion. They've never had anything but judgment. And that's a difficult place to be, you had that. And so one of the things is that we have to forgive ourselves for wherever we are and then really start loving ourselves first. Because when we're judging all those other parts in ourselves that we have not reconciled.
Right.
You know, I mean, we still have lots of, I mean, you know, living is like peeling the onion. Every time that's all life is. It's like, oh, well, you really should just get a big onion and start peeling it. because every time you think you've got it handled, oh, okay, something else shows up. Okay. And then, I think Jerry Jampolsky said a long time ago, love brings up everything unlike itself. You know, I mean, the minute you make a declaration that you're going to love and then something else shows up and then you have to make a decision again. And I think we're called every day to make a decision. Sometimes it's hour by hour.
That's true.
You got to make a decision to love. And it really, I used to be, one time I was involved with the Catholic Church a short time, and then we did the marriage encounter workshops for couples. And one of the things is they teach you on the weekend that love is a decision. You have to decide. You have to decide that even though what is happening right now or what you perceive to be happening is that are you going to love your way through it?
Right. Well, I love the song that is part of Unity called Love Is My Decision. Are you familiar with that song?
No, I'm not familiar with that song.
Check it out. It is beautiful. You might want to play that in your church. It is a wonderful, wonderful song. Love Is My Decision. Now, you talked about mystics. And do you consider yourself to be a mystic?
I do. I consider myself to be an urban mystic. I mean,
A
lot of an urban mystic is someone who has practiced spirituality and willing to swim in deep waters while still washing dishes, changing baby diapers, going to PTA. Can't go sit in the cave and be with the guru in India for 12 years because you got awesome responsibilities with family and community. But carve out that time that's necessary to shed one's consciousness, all this conscious stuff out, and to go deep within the subconsciousness and to go to that place where we know that we're one. Because on a deep level, there is a shred of oneness that I think the mystics know that. The great mystics of the ages have always known that, no matter from what land they were walking on, they knew that they were connected. And that's what they took out into the world, is that connectivity. and connection to all people. And so it's a few of us around in the cities. In every city, you're going to find some people that actually are doing this deep spiritual work, but they still carpooling their kids.
Yeah, right. Well, what are some of the best ways or easiest ways, if you will, that somebody can go to that deep place of silence?
Well, one of the ways I go there is that I started this journey many, many years ago with my repetition journaling, is that I would journal, and the whole my whole book is about journaling on an affirmation. You know, I am beautiful.
Yes.
So many times a night for, you know, three to four months on that piece, on that affirmation, until you create a new groove in your subconscious mind that you have a place to go to, that when you can snap your finger, that, you can go to that place in your mind and you can find a garden there that you can return to. Because, you know, most times when people backslide or whatever you want to call it, it's that when they come up against trauma, if you don't have a new groove in your subconscious mind, you're going to return to the old habits. And so you create that new groove in your subconscious mind. So when anything comes up, you'll have a place of peace to go to in your subconscious mind. And that will calm your nervous system down, because it's our nervous system that's going all the time that keeps us from being able to meditate or to be able to quiet ourselves, because that nervous system keeps the mind in chatter. You got to shut the mind down with the chatter so that the nervous system will calm down.
Right. Well, I do think affirmation is one of the greatest tools for changing that groove in the brain.
Yes.
It's powerful. And we are going to talk about your book a little bit later, both of your books.
Sure.
Can you tell me when you began to study metaphysics?
Oh, you know, I began to study metaphysics probably about 1975, 76, or 77. And those, I still have four little children. I mean, yeah. And in the midst of all of that, I've always been a closet scholar. I mean, people know that I'm a closet scholar. And so what I did when my children were small is that I would kick it on Friday night, and my kids, other people thought I meant going out. I kick it with the books, and I kick it with studying. And so I would set Friday night as, you know, the people go out and have a good time Friday night, but I'd be home kicking it, studying my books and just opening myself up, because I wanted to know how St. Martin the Provost, one of the saints from South America, could be seen in more than one place. I wanted to know why did the pyramids in Egypt kind of match the pyramids, some of the pyramids in other places, and because I knew that there had to be a higher level of information or communication that wasn't available to us today. And that's really what got me on my quest. I wanted to know what was that and where was it? How could one access it? You know, and so that's how I got going on my journey. Is just trying to figure that piece out.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Well, let's see. How has your study of metaphysics changed your view of God?
Oh, it has just brought it so personal. I mean, it's no longer the God in the sky or way away. You know, or I got to do something that I got to, you know, I'm trying to please God and all. I mean, it's just made it so absolutely personal to know that all of that energy and all that we call God, the omnipresence, omnipotence, is right where I am. I have access to it. It's right where I am, right where you are, right where everybody else is. That is that, and that is that promise. It is there all around us. That's why when you're really in tune, I mean, have you ever had the occasion? This is a simple occasion, but have you ever had the occasion to leave your house on a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning early and you just make every light is green?
Oh, yes, I have.
Every light is green. And it says, oh, yeah, well, this is so absolutely cool. Well, that's what it is. It is absolutely cool when you understand that there's no separation and that every light is green.
Well, that to me speaks of, yeah, that speaks of synchronicity. The other experience I have is I have faith that I'll always find a parking place nearby to where I'm going, and I always do. I always do, you know.
Yeah,
it's right there before me.
It is. Yeah, it is. But see, but the road will rise up to meet us. It will. It will rise up to meet us. The door will open, you know. I mean, it will. But we have to be there open and receptive and being able to see with our spiritual eyes and know that we're always being carried on a feather. We're always being carried, even in the midst of the storm. We're being carried. We're always being carried. You know, I lost my son a few years ago. My oldest boy passed away.
I'm sorry.
His name. Thank you so much. His name was Hiram, and Hiram was gay man. I lived his whole life out. I mean, an extraordinary human being. And when he was getting ready to pass over, I went to see him at the hospital, and the nurses said that. That he said he was going to be going, and I went to talk to him, and I sent him a telepathic message. I said, son, you know, your mom is awful sorry that you're going to leave her and you're not going to be here for me when I'm 80 years old to get me a glass of water. I said, but everybody know that I love my birthday, so, son, so, mama, I ask you if you're going to move on, that you go either before my birthday or after my birthday. That was on January 1st. My birthday is January 4th, and my son died on the 5th. Of January. I mean, it's all of this energy. I mean, it's like, wow, you know, I mean, you know, and it's everywhere. And so Hiram, energy is everywhere. You're like, it's no separation. I mean, and that's the piece for me that is most comforting, to know that even as people move beyond the view, even as they drop the body and move beyond the view, they're not gone anywhere. And all of that came from me for being open and learning and experiencing God in a bigger way.
That's beautiful.
In a bigger way. Yeah, you know. So, yeah, and you know, it's you know, nothing prepares you for the loss of your child. It's an incredible journey, and I call death the great interrupter. It interrupts your life, doesn't it? I call it the great interrupter. It causes you to sit down, to ponder. And for me, I go sit with my friends. You know, it is. But I had the privilege of being birthing Hiram to this experience, and I had the privilege of being with him when he took his last breath. I mean, and that's such a privilege.
Yes, it is.
And I'm so absolutely grateful for that, that I had that privilege to be able to be with him on both occasions. And also the comfort of knowing that he didn't go anywhere. It's like, oh, okay. You know, and all of this encompasses my bigger idea of what the universe is, what God is, what's possible, you know, what's possible in all the other realms of life that, you know, as Michael, Reverend Michael down at Agape says, life after life, and it's still going on, see. You know, and that's the first concept that we learn when we get into a bigger idea of God, that it's not stopping and that we don't have to go to heaven. We don't have to go anywhere to go to heaven. As you said earlier, we bring heaven now. You know, right now we're experiencing a little bit of heaven, me and you right now. We're bringing it to the planet. And anybody who's listening has the ability to be right here with us and understanding that in this moment, in this fullness of this moment, in this now, heaven is.
Yes. Well, I'm wondering, with this idea that you had when he passed, that there's no separation, how that affected your grieving. Did that make that easier for you, do you think?
Well, you know, on some terms it did. I mean, because, you know, you still have that human experience. I mean, we're talking right now, but you still have that human experience. And, you know, and every time I, you know, start crying, I hear him voice would say, Mama, don't cry. I mean, you know, I mean, because he says, Mama, don't cry, I'm all right, you know. I mean, and that's why I'm glad that program is on about the Mrs., that Long Island medium, because she's giving people comfort to know that their loved ones didn't go anywhere and that they can still communicate, see. But you're going to still deal with that human experience of grief. I mean, really. I mean, that is part of it. But you have something else to fall back on. You know, I mean, instead of waiting for the trumpet, the sound, and the resurrection and all of that stuff, for that belief system, that's no longer my belief system. So I know that every day I'm surrounded by a host of people or angels or my ancestors who have been with me throughout the eons of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's beautiful. Backing up a little bit, you talked about the New Thought movement earlier. And
right. There
are a lot of people that aren't familiar with it. Can you say a little bit about what that's about and enlighten us? I mean, I'm familiar with it, and I know Unity is part of the New Thought movement, but could you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, well, I can tell you what I know about it. I know Emma Curtis Hopkins. Mary Baker Eddy started the Christian Science Movement. And it was about practical Christianity. It's about believing that the word really means that you pick up your bed and walk. You know, it was a healing religion. And then when Emma Curtis Hopkins went to Chicago, the Fillmores, Ernest Holmes, and all of these, some of these great people were her students, and Unity started out as being practical Christianity, believing the word could heal, believing that. I mean, Myrtle was cured of a consumption that time would probably be called. And then Ernest, her husband, grew an inch or two on his on one side of his body because he had one side of his body shorter than the other. And all this is documented because they put it into practice. They sat in meditation. They believed that this power, the power of the living word, they also believed that that this energy was already released in the world. I mean, a lot of these traditions out there, they believe that, you know, they believe Jesus in the tomb and then resurrection, but they don't talk about the ascended Christ. I mean, mainly
right. They
talk about the suffering Christ and how he suffered. But there is in a place where all of that is breaks forth into the light, and then you are resurrected. You are raised up. You are raised up, just like the story that, you know, just like last week. We're all called to be that. We're all going to have our tomb experience. I mean, I went to the tomb. Man, my son died. That's a tomb experience. When you lose somebody in your family, that is actually a tomb experience. And then you either have the choice to stay in that or you be resurrected out. You come back out to the fullness of life. And that's what this New Thought movement is about. Come back out to the fullness of life. It's not that you're not going to have a tomb experience, but you don't stay there. You don't stay there. You have the tools to know that you're going to move through this, and even as you move through this, God is with you. Wherever you are, that God is with you. And it gets rid of that loneliness. I think it heals the soul in all those little spaces where you might have been lonely. You know, some people should have been a 10-month baby instead of a 9-month baby. You know, some people just need a little bit more. You know, some have you met those people? They just, I call them 10-month babies, but they only been in there. They should have been a 10-month baby, but they were in there for 9, like all of us. But you've met those people. They just need a little bit more, you know, they're a little bit more needy. And I say that this movement heals those spaces. See, when you understand that this expansive God in you heals those spaces of loneliness and brokenness, that for me, I didn't find it to be any place else.
Well,
and
thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for asking me that. But also, it allows you to, I mean, it's a lot of people that are not even Christians or so-called, you know, Christians that is involved with the Unity movement, because you don't have to give up what you have in order to be involved with the New Thought movement. You really don't.
Right.
You know, because
that's true.
It complements you. Yeah, you know, they're not asking you to make Lord Jesus your Lord and Savior. You know,
no.
They're not asking you that. See?
No,
yeah.
And there are people from all religious traditions that come to Unity and can still practice their original traditions as
That's
well.
Right.
So,
That's right. Yes.
Now,
yes.
I'm going to just take a short break here to promote my book. I'm a recovering alcoholic and a recovering sex addict, which inspired me to write a book about a character that is such. And so we'll just take a minute break, and then we will come back.
Sure.
We're speaking with Reverend Harriet Walden.
Prepare to be shocked. Prepare to be moved. Prepare to laugh. Prepare to cry. And prepare to be inspired. Dive into David Clark's latest book, Shades of Gay, and you will find yourself plunged into the trenches of sexual addiction. You will embark upon a kaleidoscopic tour from the abyss to higher ground. In the beginning, it was love at first sight when Daniel and Mark met, but through the years, that same love became tainted. Daniel, an alcoholic and sex addict, has found himself unable to resist the lure of other men. When Mark discovers his infidelity, he leaves Daniel, who begins a dark descent into sexual tryst after tryst. Shades of Gay reveals the myriad desires a lost man can permit his body and soul to revel in, despite the pain they bring. But can such fleeting moments of pleasure bring meaning to life? Will Daniel realize the love he had with Mark is worth more than the sweat spent in other men's beds?
And to find out the answer to that, go to Amazon.com, put in Shades of Gay and my name too, because there's more than one book by that title. It's Shades of Gay by David Clark. And the book has received rave reviews, all 5 out of 5 star reviews. So thank you for that, and thank you for your patience, Reverend. Let me ask you, what is your current ministry about?
Well, you know, right now my ministry is actually a social justice ministry. I did have a short time at a church, Sojourner Truth Ministry. I was helping them until they got a pastor, and then they pretty much evaporated into doing something else. But my social justice ministry has been around, and it's with Mothers for Police Accountability. That's so my ministry is about empowering people to stand up, to step up to who they are, and to take responsibility. Because sometimes we want one group to change, but accountability is for everybody. And I'm involved with working for police accountability. I recently got appointed by the previous mayor here on the police community police commission. Seattle is one of these cities that's under consent decree by the Justice Department, ordering the police department to make some change. So I'm part of that. And so everything I do in my life is really out of that, out of my spirituality that I bring with me, and I bring it to wherever I'm at, and I call it the social justice ministry that I'm involved with.
Very good.
Thank you.
I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your book, Pledge of Excellence.
Oh, okay. Well, my Pledge of Excellence is a program that I wrote. And I wrote it based on my own children. It's a parenting guide. It helps parents to be able to work with their children to help them achieve higher academic achievement. And I work with parents in the home on one-on-one, and I go in and I present this program. But most people really want their children to succeed, but they don't have a discipline in their home. And, you know, in order to be successful, whatever it is, you have to have 3 things. You have to have some discipline. You have to have some respect for yourself and for authority. And you have to have, discipline. Self-control almost is the same thing. But these kinds of things, kinds of parents are not always in tune to with. A lot of times parents come home, they're so busy by getting dinner, and they don't always check their children's homework, or a lot of times they're not going out to the school. So this program, I present it in the home, and I go back to the home 3 times during the semester. I work one-on-one with the parents, because what I do is I show parents how to get 20 hours a week more in their lives that they didn't know they had, at least 10 hours, I can say, a week, and by cutting off the television. I mean, you know, most people don't want to cut off the TV.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it's a great sacrifice for some families to cut off the television from 7 to 9.
Yeah.
But it really is for the children. And then if you if a parent wants to get something done, you know, like somebody might want to knit or they have something else they really want to do, if they if we cut the television off at a certain time, 2 hours a night, and while the children are doing their homework, the parent can also be engaged in a hobby. I mean, so everybody wins. And then
yes.
We talk about rewards affirmation, always having affirmative affirmation, always having a nice place or a table or someplace where the children can do their homework. And at least when you're going to the homes, you get to see exactly what people are doing in the home. I'm not a social worker, and so I'm not a school teacher. So when I go into the homes, people are so relaxed because I'm just a parent. That's all I am, is a parent. And I've just had a lot of success along the way, trial and error. And I believe that parents need to stay in the game. I don't think you should ever give up on your children. I think you need to stay in there. And you need to be present. And that means you need to be listening. And I tell parents you need to go in those bedrooms because a lot of times kids got stuff in the bedrooms that can get you in trouble that you don't know
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
And until they're paying the house note, it's still your house. And I teach people how to take their power back. Because in America right now, in the last 25 years, parents have acquiesced their power to young children. I mean, even they're even asking three-year-olds what you want. I mean, how does a three-year-old know what they want? I mean, so we've shifted power to the young people who are not capable of making a certain judgment. They don't have the capacity. You know, the insurance industry says that young men are not completely grown until 25 because of something happening with the brain. And that's why young men's insurance rate doesn't go down until they're 25.
Right.
I mean, and so that's all this stuff. And, you know, in Germany and France, they don't try to teach the boys to learn to read until they're 7 or 8. Because they believe that there's something happening in the brains and that boys are not ready. That's why girls are smarter than boys when they go to, in first and second and third grade. I mean, after a while, boys catch up. But in Germany, they don't even try it. They teach them to read a little bit later. And in America, you know, everything is predicated on doing it now. And
yeah.
So you have a lot of people, a lot of young people who just don't have all that they need. And I believed it. And so when I learned about the insurance industry, I said, "Wow, isn't that amazing?" The insurance industry says that a young man doesn't become an adult until 25. Yeah.
Well,
so,
I think
some
don't become adults until they're after 40.
Oh, I agree. But you don't get free till 50. I mean,
yeah.
You know, because all of lifetime, you know, you're still concerned about what people say and, you know,
mm-hmm,
what are they
mm-hmm.
doing or your family of origin or whatever. But when you get to be, you know, you start, there's a place in your life, for me, around 35, I started wanting this, there's something else calling me. And by 45 and when I got to be 50, so, yeah, I'm free now. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, wow, this is absolutely cool. So people need to stay in the game and really with their children. I mean, understand what they're reading, what they're listening to. I mean, who they're talking to on the television, I mean, on this Internet. I mean, and I believe for me and my family, everything had to be out in the open. I think children spend too much time alone. I really do. I think they spend way too much time alone in their bedrooms. On these computers, texting people, and now they're getting in trouble with this sex texting and all of this other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And parents don't have a clue. So parents got to get way more engaged in this electronic and this fast media-paced world that our kids are living in. Parents got to just get more engaged in that. Otherwise, their children will be doing something that that they don't even know about. See?
Right. Well,
and the other thing, too, is that a lot of people, can I just say one more thing? A lot of people pull back when their kids get to be teenagers, but that's when you double your effort. That's when you need to show up to make sure that they know that you know that you're watching them. I mean, because a lot of people, when the kids get to be ninth grade, they take hands off. That's when you need hands on. from 9th grade to 12th grade is when you need to be even more engaged in your children's lives.
Mm. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You've talked about affirmation a couple of times, which I believe is a powerful tool. For people that don't know what that is, could you explain?
Well, an affirmation is a phrase or a sentence, and sometimes it's one word, power, life, living, love, that people sometimes repeat often. And you know, it's something about the voice. I mean, when you say something with your voice, there's vibrations. And there's something that happens in our system. There's some words that we can say that you can feel the energy. Because all life is energy. I mean, everything is energy. And you can feel the power of them. And what happens is that once you release the power in the words, your life starts happening. Things start happening for you in a wonderful way. I mean, you can speak it out into the because the word was, you know, the logos, the word was first. And when you speak the word, everything else manifests from that. And so for me, you know, it's really important for people to find what resonates for them. I mean, when I first got started, I used a lot of songs in the Bible. You know, I mean, I look up into the hills from which my strength comes. I mean, all of these, because sometimes when you're picking yourself up, you need to be fortified. You need to fill yourself up with all of these wonderful words and all of this, because the mind, the subconscious mind will bring back to you whatever you put in it. And so it behooves us to fill our minds all day long, our subconscious mind, with what's wonderful, what's wonderful, what's kind, what's beautiful, because that's what we want. It's not only, it's not woo-woo, it's real. I mean, it's been demonstrated, it's been real, because there's enough science out there now, quantum physics, strength, I mean, it's a lot of science out there that show that words and vibrations are important. It shows that there's a real correlation between positive energy, and then he's the Japanese man that wrote The Power About Water. He shows that when you speak to water and then you freeze it, what happens to it? I mean, so the word is powerful, and we're speaking affirmations all the time. Right now, you and I, we're speaking affirmations all the time. So people all the time are speaking, but they don't understand that they're speaking and bringing into their lives what they don't want. An affirmation is tailored to help you empower yourself, empower others, and to bring into your life and to speak life to others what people want.
Right. Well, you know, the thing about affirmations is it is all positive, and you reap what you sow. So it's very important to put out positive energy, and it will return to you. And I think one of the reasons that we're speaking affirmation is because we're upbeat, we're positive, we're focused on our spirits, we're focused on improving ourselves and improving the lives of others. So I encourage people to use affirmation.
Well, but also I try to talk with young people, because I think that what's missing in my generation, our generation, I don't think we actually taught young people that thoughts are things, and whatever you say, whatever you think, whatever it is will come to your life. Because a lot of the songs, a lot of the lyrics that's out there today is not life-giving. We wrote, you know, we grew up with good music. I mean, you know, it was life-giving music. I mean, even with Sam Cooke, a change is going to come. So the young people today make songs that really pull down life. It doesn't lift them up. So the energy is low. Whenever there's low energy, things happen. I mean, things that's not good happen. And so all of the freedom movements around the world have always sung upbeat songs. They were calling freedom to come. They were calling people to not to be afraid. They were calling people to have courage. And it moves the soul in a good way. And then you have the reverse happening when the music is down, talking about how bad it is, how you need to harm people, all of that. And it slows down things. It slows down the evolutionary process in life. And so young people, I mean, we have to do a better job as older people, to let young people know there's a correlation between how you use that I am. You know, I
yes.
mean, what you putting that I am to is important. It is the most important I am. I am means something, and it means something good. And if I haven't told you that, I'm sorry. Let me tell you how to use the I am. You know, I mean, and I think that's what the work is for the young people, because we have to turn it around with the young people. No society goes forward without their children, without their youth. No society can go forward. We need them. We need them to be engaged, to have high idealism, to believe that the world is good, to have hope that tomorrow will bring something new. We need them. And our job is, how are we going to help them understand that sometimes pop culture is not where it's at, and that that whatever they think about, whatever they speak about, shows up in their lives sometime the next moment, and sometimes 5 years from now. It's going to definitely come back. You know? And I think it's our job as elders to be able to say, okay, you know, let me show you how you can say that in a different way, you know. And affirmation is part of that.
Yes. Well, before we run out of time, I want to ask you about your book, Repetitious Journaling. Would you tell us about that?
Well, thank you so much. It's Repetition Journaling. It's called Create a New Groove in Your Subconscious Mind. And I started journaling on this back in 1989. It's been a long time that I've been doing the affirmations. And I had a lot of stuff going on in my life. And I started journaling. Like I said earlier, I would take one word or one sentence that empowered me. And one of the first ones I ever used is, I accept my good now. Because we've been taught that we're not worthy. You know, even Catholic Church, people say it every Sunday, Lord, I'm not worthy, receive you, say the words, and I will be healed. I never said that. I always said, Lord, I am worthy. You have said the words, and I have been healed. I mean, and so I started journaling, and then I realized that something was happening in my life, that I had a place in my consciousness that I call the Garden of Eden, that I could snap my finger, and I could return there. And all of a sudden, I got to realize that that's how you create a new groove. And it's through this journaling process, and I was disciplined. Like I said, that's one of the tools of success is discipline. I mean, it's a hard one for people, but I was disciplined. And what I would do is I journal every night 75 times, sometimes 35 times on the same sentence for 2 to 3 months. And I was determined to have a breakthrough. I wanted to have a new groove. I wanted to be able to think a new thought. I wanted to really accept the fact that I could accept my good now, and that everywhere I went, God had a blessing for me. And that was one of my first affirmations is, I accept my good now. And I am enough. You know, that's another one. I am enough. Just the essence of who I am, I'm enough. You know, I don't have to buy another thing. I don't have to do anything else. I am enough. And, I mean, just to understand that piece, because, see, we always program that we're not good enough, that we always have to do something else. We always need more, something new. That's something that we got to have. But really, the soul is, I mean, we're already enough. And how do you accept that?
Yes, we are.
Enough. And when you get, you know, and then, and my book will also have art in it. I'm a watercolorist. And so to have that, and then, you know, one of my affirmations, I am blessed, and I am, and you are blessed. We were born in a blessing. I mean, that's another thing. We're not born cursed. It's nothing wrong with us. It's nothing wrong with us. How can God curse itself? You know, it's nothing wrong with us. We were all born with a blessing.
And so
to understand that, to really understand on a deep level that we're so absolutely blessed. And this is the most blessed moment we have is right now.
Right.
And absolutely
right.
Blessed. And so I have about 30 affirmations in the book and 30 pieces of art. And then the journal, I have a journal that's going to come with the book that you can journal in, you know, because one of the things about, there's a correlation between consciousness and writing. You know, your mind, your deep subconscious mind believes something when you write it also. because it's something that happens in the brain when you write, when you're writing something. I mean, that's why when people, you know, I mean, you're a writer. I mean, so you know that.
Yes, I do. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's something that happens in the brain. You have a shift, number one. You have a shift. And then you begin to believe it. I mean, and then you can put it out there. And so, you know, I am blessed. You are blessed is one of those affirmations. And today I begin again. I mean, how many times did we get up with that? Yesterday, oh, man. But today I begin again. And that gives us the freedom to know that nothing is ever lost, you know, that here's another day. And it's fresh new day. It's just absolutely fabulous to have a fresh new day.
Mm.
We begin again, you know?
Yes.
And then
yes.
And then whatever else you might think you want to forgive yourself for, well, hey, you got a new day. Let's go for it. Let's
right.
rock it. Let's rock it. Yeah, so basically the book of affirmations, and then there will be instructions on how to journal. And I'll be doing workshops and teaching people this technique that I just, you know, sometimes if you are a deep student like I am, you get these ahas, you know, something comes to you and you say, oh, okay, thank you. And then you get up and you do something about it. And this is how I raised my children, because in the last part of my life, not the last part of my life, but when I was raising my children, my husband and I, we had already separated. So I needed all the tools that I could to keep me mentally, spiritually, and physically going. I mean, because you need these tools. And so I just was always anxious to learn something new. And then as all this came to me, the Pledge of Excellence and repetition journaling, and probably one of my things that I loved the best was the Year of Prayer for Children, when we invited people from around the world to send prayers into the Church Council of Greater Seattle. We created a calendar, and we asked people to make a prayer commitment to children. Now, I mean, my grandmother taught me it was the prayers of the elderly people who kept the children safe until they were old enough to pray for themselves. And so prayer is really a part of my life, and I'm an intercessory person. My grandmother taught me to pray for people when I was 7 years old, and I spent a lifetime praying for other people. I do it just, I mean, it's just part of my life, and I think it's such a gift to be able to pray and to be able to remember people and pray for people. And as scriptures say, yeah, pray in the closet. Most people know I never pray for them. Most people will never know I pray for them unless we have a conversation. You know, I don't go around telling people that I pray for you. You know, and I don't do that. But I just, I was taught the value of prayer and that what it does, it creates that bubble. It creates that energy. It's part of that affirmation on some level that makes the road rise up to meet us. You know, every light is green. You know, as we talked about earlier, green lights, the parking space, all of that is part of it's just part of the whole circle of prayer and affirmation that I believe in.
Well, listen, we're almost done, so I just wanted to jump in and ask, where can people find your books?
Well, my book is not printed yet. I mean, it's not completely ready yet, but they can always email me. My email is Harriet G. Walden at yahoo.com is the email for my book. So, yes, people can email me there. And my telephone number is 206-380-1710 in Seattle, and I always answer.
Well, thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And blessings to you with your work and with your book and all the things that you're doing. Bless you.
Thank you. Bless you.
You're good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So now we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the fact that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.